Hey, Vesties. I've got a bonus for you today in the feed to tell you about We Can Do Hard Things, a show that we think you're going to love. We all do hard things every day. Things like loving and losing, caring for children and parents, forging and ending friendships, battling addiction, illnesses, and loneliness. But often we struggle in silence. And that's where Glennon Doyle, her wife Abby Wambach, and her sister Amanda Doyle come in. Twice a week, the three, with help from guests like Jane Fonda, Oprah Winfrey, and former First Lady Michelle Obama, strive to find light in the darkness. They laugh, cry, and help each other carry the hard in hopes of living a bit braver and less alone. I'm excited to bring you a listen into an episode with author and clinical psychologist Lindsay C. Gibson. Lindsay joins Glennon, Abby, and Amanda to talk about how to know if someone you know is a narcissist or emotionally immature, and what to do if you realize that you are emotionally immature. Take a listen.
Welcome to We Can Do Hard Things, and today we are continuing an incredibly important conversation that I think can actually change the way that we interact with so many people in our lives. The conversation is with Lindsay Gibson. It is about emotionally immature people. If you have not gotten the download about what an emotionally immature person is, please listen to episodes 263 and 264 and the last episode before you jump in here. But I am telling you right now, you are not going to want to miss this. This is like 50 minutes that will actually change the rest of your day. So today we have Lindsay Gibson. Let's hear from Dara.
Hi, my name is Dara, and I just finished listening to your episodes on emotional immaturity. And my question is, I have identified myself as a survivor of emotional neglect, and I recognized myself in those conversations to some extent. And my question is, if I am somebody who is emotionally immature and I want to change that, what do I do? How do I grow out of this? And what can I do to try to expand my emotional maturity? Thank you so much. I am a huge fan and I appreciate everything that you all do.
Dara, you're the best kind of person in the whole world. I just love Dara. I mean, amazing. God, Dara.
So good.
So brave. Right there in her name. Dara.
Yeah.
Brave, bold, honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, because here we go. It's like, Dara, the first step has already been accomplished. Mm-hmm. All right. You're self-reflecting. You're wondering, do I have any of these characteristics of emotional immaturity? And if I do, what the heck am I going to do about them? Mm-hmm. People who are going to be really hard to change are the emotionally immature people who have no capacity, no interest for self-reflection because they think that they're right.
Yep.
They think that they know it all. They don't know what they don't know. They keep on moving in the same direction, regardless of the feedback, because this is what they know to do. And they are hell-bent on managing their stress by keeping things the same and by responding in ways that make them feel better, not necessarily the things that make the situation better. Emotionally immature people get very locked and loaded in their own way of looking at the world. And this creates a kind of an echo chamber, okay? And their spouse can come and say, you know, I'm going to leave you if you don't stop doing whatever. And they're like, I am who I am, or therapy is stupid, whatever, because they're not interested in changing. Mm-hmm. But what I would say to you, Dara, is that, yes, if you have the inkling that you may have some emotionally immature traits, there is so much that you can do to begin to change that. I mean, psychoeducation is huge, I think, because then we have you giving yourself a language and a conceptual framework to kind of create your own home study course, Like, I want to work toward these things, or I want to watch it when I do this, because now I can identify what these things are and I can pick the directions that I want to grow in. So that's huge. You can listen to other people's feedback. If you're, let's say you're having a problem with your adult child, or maybe you're having a problem with your spouse or whatever, you can ask them for very limited feedback in one area at a time. Like, what is it that I do, if anything, that really kind of drives you nuts in this area? And then you just listen. You don't, it's a fact-finding mission. You're not arguing about it. You're not defending yourself. You're just asking in this one area. We're not opening this up to give me a critique of my entire personality.
I'm just talking about driving, people.
Just driving. So you make it very limited, because this stuff, feedback is hard to hear.
It is hard.
It's hard to hear. Don't do that to yourself. Don't open the door to random reassessment of your personality. You want to ask them for a specific thing. Tell them that's all you can handle, but you just want to gather this information because you're curious. And then after they tell you, you just thank them and go on about your business. Thank you for telling me. And then you can contemplate that and see what you think of it and what you might want to do. Of course, psychotherapy is wonderful, because there you are in a relationship with someone, an individual therapy and group therapy too, but you can begin to see the dynamics. Group therapy is great for that.
Yes.
Because you've got all these different personalities who are reacting to you, and whom you're reacting to.
Yes.
And so that brings it in for examination in a very emotionally real way.
Yes.
Okay, so right there, in vivo, there it is. You can see what you're doing. You can get feedback for how you're coming across. And maybe that person, that therapist, will have some ideas about how you can get the same needs met in a more emotionally intelligent way. In a way that doesn't make other people feel bad or make them defensive against you. But in general, if you're trying to move in the direction of more emotional maturity, I think that one of the things that is very helpful to look at is, where are the areas, or when do I need to be right all the time? Okay. You know, it's that old saying about, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Okay. Well, emotionally immature people, because of their low stress tolerance, always need to be right. They get over in the left hemisphere of their brain that says, this is this and that is that. And I know what it is. And that's what we're sticking with. They don't go over to their emotionally wise right hemisphere to get the lay of the land, to, you know, sort of see what the other person is feeling, to have empathy, to have imagination. They don't go there. They stay over here where it's safe. Like, I already know what needs to happen. So if you are that kind of person, you might want to give that a thought or two, because that is classic emotionally immature behavior. Just like the four-year-old, they know what's right. They know what they need. They know they need that candy bar before supper. They know they need to be able to play out in the front yard. They just know this. So question that tendency in yourself. And the other one is, pay attention to the quality of your relationships, the interactions in your relationship. Is there good communication? Do you all listen to each other? Do you respect the other person's individuality and maybe differing opinions? Just think about that.
Yeah.
Do your own self-assessment, because we want to see if you can respect other people's right to think differently from you, respect their individuality. Like, maybe your kids are not going to do their life the way you want them to. That kind of backing up and seeing the other person as a true other.
Yes.
They're not a reflection of you. They're not a
threat. They're not a threat.
A missionary for your worldview. Mm-hmm. They are who they are. And if you can work on appreciating that, you will become much more emotionally mature in the way that you interact with them. So to practice things like empathy, staying calm, that's stress management, less reactivity, and I don't have to fight to the death for everything. Mm-hmm. I can let other people make a decision or be right sometimes. Mm-hmm. These are things that are very hard to do mm-hmm. if you're emotionally immature, but you can work toward that and it will improve your relationship immeasurably when you're able to tackle some of those things. Things like meditation, any kind of stress reduction is very good for helping with building emotional maturity because you are turning yourself toward your inner world. And you're turning yourself toward a sense of self, which a lot of emotionally mature people have trouble with. And the more you do that, the more you will grow because now you're more aware of your inner life. That's going to be reflected in your relationships with other people because you're going to be more aware of their inner life.
That's good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot you can do to mature yourself. I mean, I had a experience a few months ago with my husband where I was sitting at the dining room table working on a book or something, and I was deep into it. And of course, I've plopped myself in the middle of the living space right at the dining room table because that appealed to me. Meanwhile, he's going in and out to the deck behind me because he's doing something out there. And I said something like, "Can you just stop shutting and opening the door so much?" And he said, "You know, the way that you tell me to do that is making me feel like I've done something wrong." And I hate to say this to you, Lindsay, but that reminds me of your mom.
Ooh, damn.
And
a nuclear option.
Well, he never, never says stuff like that. But I guess it was just low-hanging fruit.
Yes, yeah. He's and like, I've been saving it for 20 years for that one moment.
God, it must be hard to be married to Lindsay Gibson. You always have to be freaking emotionally mature all the time, probably.
Oh, God. Exhausting.
So when he did that, because he does it so rarely,
yes,
it really stopped me.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, not only is that correct, but I'm the one who sat down at the dining room table.
Yes.
In the middle of the house to do my concentration work.
Yeah, interesting.
It was an eye-opener.
Yeah.
So I'm just giving this example because, you know, I'm somebody that thinks about emotional maturity all the time. And here I was acting in a way like, why aren't you revolving around me?
Yeah.
Because I was stressed by my work. Mm-hmm. I was having to be very egocentric because I had to get this thing done by a deadline. And that put me in an emotionally immature spot within myself, which is, I'm so stressed, I need everybody to revolve around me. Mm-hmm. And he just reminded me, oh, there's another person with feelings in this orbit. And how do you want to be, Lindsay? Do you want to be a person who makes other people feel bad? Or do you want to be a person who says, gee, should I do my work at the dining room table or go downstairs to my office? Maybe that would have been a better decision.
And the reason why self-reflection is so important to all of this is because those are the moments where we haven't been in touch with ourselves. So we don't know what our needs are. So we start lashing out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we were doing all the self stuff, we would be like, oh, this is when I get stressed out and I can be kind of an asshole. So I'm going to separate myself. Like, that's where it really is real. The more you're rooted in yourself and your bodily experience, and then you make decisions based on that instead of outlashing.
One of the things that I've been kind of toying with over the last 6 months or so, I have an intense insecurity around my intellect. And so sometimes I can get telling a story, whether it's completely true or false, feels a little bit less relevant to me at times. And so I'm trying to speak really only true things. And so when I'm in conversation with somebody like Glennon, and I don't know something, that feels like such a diminishing of power or control of some sort. And so I've been working on saying just these words, I don't know, period. And then I would not expand on why I don't know it. It was just, I don't know. And it's just been this exercise in like getting comfortable and safe with A, not knowing everything, and B, letting that be fine, right?
It's been beautiful.
Yeah. And I think what you just said really made me feel good. It makes me feel like, am I or aren't I? And it's neither. Mm-hmm. We're going to have moments where we're really connected with ourselves and we're super high in our emotional intelligence, but then we might slip into a moment or a part in us will show up that dysregulates us and we go into an immature. That's the word, immature.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but here's the thing. There's a book by Ed Tronick, who's a infant researcher, and I think it's called something, Discord is in the title, but he talks about how with mothers and babies that you have these mismatches at time between your capacity for empathy and the baby's needs. So you mess it up sometimes, or you're not there for your children, for your older children. So you make mistakes, but he says that creates a building block of trust. Mm. There's the basic kind of trust, which is something will magically appear and make this hunger go away or this wet diaper go away. That's one kind of trust. But another kind of trust is, hey, I landed on this planet with these people who notice when they have hurt me and they come back and they apologize. Mm. Or they're doing something and they seem to realize it and then they change.
Yes.
And that builds a stronger relationship every time it happens, if you respond to it in a way that changes the course towards something more productive. That's that missile analogy. Like, okay, you're not going to stop the missile. The missile has moved on. It's no longer at this coordinate, okay? It has moved on, but you can guide it. Mm-hmm. You can guide it.
It's the comfort.
So it's like, it doesn't matter what you do so much as what you do next.
And you don't have to fix it. It's like a pattern. It's the comfort.
You can't fix it, but that's not the problem. The problem is that you've hurt somebody or you've disappointed someone or whatever. What do you do next? Because the missile is still moving. Mm-hmm. So when you come back with an apology or even an empathic recognition that the other person has been hurt or there's been some problem, you are actually mending and making the relationship stronger because you've just built that bridge toward, hey, we can communicate when something has gone wrong, or I can say, I don't know, or I could say to my husband, I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. I don't know why I didn't go set up in my office because I wanted us to get back to our happy place together. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, I was going to feel better if I really looked at this objectively and owned my part of it.
And isn't it the cycle of being human too? It's like, you know, you're born and then there's all that trauma of literally being born. And then the first thing that happens to us, hopefully, is we feel the trauma, we feel the terror, we feel it, and then comfort. Mm-hmm. It's like fear, stress, unknown, uncertainty, and then being held.
We can do hard things, right?
If you want to hear more from Glenn and Abby and Amanda's conversation with Lindsay C. Gibson, head over to We Can Do Hard Things, episode 285. If you like what you hear, join them and guests like Tracy Ellis Ross, Gloria Steinem, Elizabeth Gilbert, Brandi Carlile, and Brené Brown every Tuesday and Thursday on the free Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.